This podcast is brought to you in part by Contact My Politician, a free, fast way to find your local and national politicians and to keep them accountable. Click on their banner at our website, michaelmedved.com.
From pop culture to politics, this is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day, despite the fact that a great city has been plagued by, honestly, the most inept, the most radical, the most mistaken and benighted and altogether loathsome city government that one can imagine. I'm talking, of course, about the city of Seattle, where the 2021 budget is now going to cut the police department's funding by almost 20%. And you know what's happening is the far left in the city is howling that a 20% cut, potentially losing 30 or more police officers, that that kind of cut is not enough, that there should be a full 50% cut that a number of radicals pledged to achieve. There's also a Senate candidate, yes, in a Senate race going forward, saying that racism is so endemic to the United States, it is so systemic, it is so profound, that it counts as a pre-existing condition. And this not said long ago in the distant past, said right now, shortly before his Senate race. We will get to that. And we will also get to Ilhan Omar's views on foreign policy, remarkable views on foreign policy that it seems to me indicate why it was such a shame that she is in such a one-party district and actually managed to get herself reelected. She ran 70,000 votes behind Joe Biden in her district, however. We will get to all of that coming up this hour on The Michael Medved Show, and later we'll be speaking about some other horrific examples, it seems to me, of people still, despite the fact of an election season that actually provided all kinds of encouragement, it seemed, to conservatives and, yes, even to Republicans, that despite the encouragements in the election season, the left appears more determined than ever, at least in some quarters, to push cultural issues that most Americans will not support. We will get to that as well on The Medved Show. First of all, the city of Seattle, I think, stands as an example of why people across the country look at cities like this, look at local governments like this, look at Portland, look to some extent to Chicago, to New York City, and say, wait a minute, this is not functional. This is not doing well. You will notice that Joe Biden got himself elected not by saying, oh, gosh, we have to do just like our local leaders are doing in cities across the country. Because a lot of those cities are in trouble. They're in trouble with rising crime. They're in trouble with a general sense of social breakdown. There is a nationwide crisis of homelessness, which, of course, none of the liberal city governments are dealing with effectively. But there is this. Seattle's 2021 budget will cut the city police department's funding by almost 20%, but that's far less than what officials had promised during protests over the summer. Most members of the Seattle City Council had pledged to reduce the Seattle Police Department's funding by 50% after protests called for police departments to be defunded following a, quote, nationwide reckoning, says Newsweek, sparked by the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. But after a vote yesterday, the city council approved a budget that cut the police budget by around 18%, with millions redirected to community programs. And it always sounds so good to talk about community programs. How do those community programs work in actually keeping people safer? I think it's a real challenge for anyone to either show or explain how that's supposed to work. In a statement yesterday, Mayor Jenny Durkan of Seattle said she would sign the legislation and applauded the fact that the council had taken a more deliberate and measured approach to the police department's budget. Okay, given the fact, and this is the context, that the murder rate in Seattle, we have 41 homicides in Seattle, which is up from 28 last year. Just 32 in all of 2018. We're not even done with 2020. We have 41. So is this really the right time to cut the police department budget? Mayor Durkan said, I believe we are laying the groundwork to make systemic and lasting changes to policing. Okay, changes to provide more resources to police officers, to provide more effective strategies, or just changes to try to, quote, punish police officers because they have run afoul of some of the left-wing activists who dominate cities like Seattle. Shama Swant, the Socialist Party member of the city council, she is, I believe she's the only non-Democrat on the city council. She voted no on the budget because it spent too much on police, she thought. She said the budget deeply fails working people and marginalized communities. After months of declaring that Black Lives Matter, she declared, every single Democratic city council member voted against the people's budget and my proposal to develop legislation to establish an elected community oversight board with full powers over police, including hiring and firing, which, by the way, doesn't save money. It costs money. And, of course, deeply opposed by the police themselves. Look, the idea of a professional police department is necessary for any city, for any town, for any community. A $4.5 million cut aimed at hiring was also rejected, along with Shama Swant's people's budget, as well as a $151 million cut that Swant said would meet the 50% defund requirement. Deborah Juarez, who was one of two council members who did not make the original pledge to favor a 50% cut defunding the police, tweeted that the budget, quote, will make substantial cuts to the Seattle Police Department and redirect funding toward communities of color. Okay, how do you do both? How do you make cuts without eliminating, for instance, police enforcement downtown, which is economically and just in terms of where people are and where the crime is, it's important. The Seattle Police Officers Guild, SPOG, called the city council naive, they're right, and said crime would rise as a result. You're going to see crime rise. We're already seeing increased homicide rates that we haven't seen in decades, said Mike Solon, who's been a guest on this show, the president of SPOG. The Downtown Seattle Association also said the reduced funding for the police department will make neighborhoods less safe. Of course, they're right. Seattle has seen a total of 34,912 violent and property crimes so far this year, according to the city's crime dashboard. The number of reported offenses have topped 40,000 every year since 2013, but this year looks set to end with the lowest crime rates in several years. Part of that is because of reduced economic activity and reduced crowds because of COVID-19. We will get to more of far-left idiocy and its possibility of wrecking the Democratic Party. More coming up on The Medved Show. On the Michael Medved show, of course, one of the charges against the business community, against free markets, against conservatives generally, that the extreme left likes to level all the time is, oh my goodness, people on the right are only concerned about money. They're not concerned about people. All they are concerned about is big bucks and giant bucks. But you know what? When you look at it, it's actually the left that believes that money is magical, that money and spending money by government can solve everything. You see that in the story from Seattle that we just covered, is the idea, okay, we're going to cut 20% from the police budget and assign this to community programs. They don't even specify what community programs or how this is supposed to help. It's just the idea that spending money on worthy goals is virtuous. The city of Seattle spends, I believe it's now over $100 million a year on their very brilliant and effective solutions to the problem of homelessness, none of which has worked. There has been anyone who lives in Seattle or big cities across the country, whether you live in L.A. or San Francisco or New York or Chicago, there's been virtually no progress against the general problem of homelessness, despite what people send and what people spend. And it's in that context that I want to consider our tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
This new tweet comes from Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. And it's illustrated with a little graphic, too, that she obviously had her staff set up. She writes, a single F-35 costs over $100 million. For that kind of money, we could feed 40 million kids. I've introduced legislation to block the sale of F-35s and other weapons to the UAE, a global human rights abuser. We should be focused on the deadly pandemic, not arming dictators. Okay, what is this all about? First of all, when you start thinking about the math, and she is talking about feeding 40 million kids for $100 million, okay, that comes to like $250 per child, not $250. $2.50 per child. So her little graphic makes it look a little bit more realistic. It then says her graphic doesn't say for that we could feed 40 million kids. Yeah, you could feed them one meal. They say 40 million meals for kids. Oh, I see. That equals one F-35 jet. So there's that sleight of hand. But secondly, she wants to block not the gift of F-35s and other weapons to the United Arab Emirates, but she wants to block their sale. Doesn't Ilhan Omar recognize the difference? This is not money that we are spending. This is money that the United Arab Emirates are spending, and they're a very wealthy, developing economy, and obviously a lot based upon oil wealth. But the UAE achieved a peace deal, which is very meaningful and very prominent and very positive for the whole Middle East. And this is seen as part of that. If you go back to the story just a week ago that was covered, the Trump administration formally notified Congress that it plans to sell, not give, sell 50 stealth F-35 fighter jets to the United Arab Emirates as part of a broader arms deal worth $23 billion aimed at deterring potential threats from Iran Okay. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he had authorized the sale in keeping with the administration's middle peace efforts. It seems to me astonishing that a member of Congress of the United States would not recognize or acknowledge the difference between spending money on jets to give to an ally and the sale of military equipment of someone who is allied with the United States and with Saudi Arabia and with Israel right now in resisting Iran, which has to be a crucial and continuing element of U.S. foreign policy. And this goes to a deeper problem, and it's a deeper problem with so much liberal thinking, which is that somehow just spending this money on meals for kids delivers meals for kids. It isn't so easy. And again, the idea of 50 jets for the UAE being purchased, that this is something that people are going to see this tweet and see the chart and the graph where they lay out all the meals for kids versus the one F-35 jet. It's so foolish. And yes, it is extreme. And speaking of extreme, there is Raphael Warnock. Reverend Warnock is one of course, the two most important Democrats in the country, at least until the election, the runoff election on January. Yep, that's this coming January, January 5th. There is a highlight or low light that was discovered, and it's a speech that he gave not back in 1995, not back in 2003. This is just in 2017, just 3 years ago. And it's a remarkable speech, especially when you consider the context. And it describes racism as a pre-existing condition of the United States. I think that Kelly Loeffler is right to bring this material up, because the fact is that Reverend Warnock is running in Georgia, and he has taken radical and America-hating points of view that are not constructive. I know he's run away from those, but if you have a record of public speeches, then you do owe the people of Georgia and of the United States, because he could be the deciding vote in control of the U.S. Senate. You do have an obligation to try to explain this kind of thing and what your attitude is right now to America and those nations that stand with us against Islamic extremism. We will be right back on The Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Politician.com. It's an absolutely free and bipartisan, nonpartisan service. Don't forget to tell them that Michael sent you. Okay, this big Florida election is coming up. And of course, there are lots of Democrats who are complaining that the tone of the election has been so negative. Yes, it is a big senatorial election coming up in Georgia, of course. And in Georgia, there are two U.S. senators on the ballot. One is Kelly Loeffler, who's been a senator for less than a year. She was appointed to fill the seat of Johnny Isaacson, who had to retire because of illness. And she's running against Raphael Warnock. And people say, well, Raphael Warnock, forget about all the disturbing things that are being advertised about him. He's a nice guy. He's a pastor. Okay, you own, when you are a public person, statements that you make in public gatherings. And in terms of Raphael Warnock, he said this, and it is back in 2017, not so long ago. And what Raphael Warnock had to say was this when he was speaking to a New Baptist Covenant church, visiting that church, preparing for his senatorial race. Listen.
In a special moment. We are in an evil moment. We are in a tragic moment. And I suggest to you that our politics is symptomatic of our sickness. We've got a lot of problems, but I would not be a prophet if I did not tell you that racism is America's pre-existing condition. And like the insurance companies, nobody wants to go there. Nobody wants to cover it because we wonder what it will cost. But we, the land of the free and the incarceration capital of the world, in this land where we warehouse 25% of the world's prisoners, although we are only 5% of the world, we ought to ask ourselves, what has it cost us not to cover it, not to face up to it, not to confront it, not to deal with it? Racism is America's pre-existing condition.
Okay, and is he offering insurance against that pre-existing condition? And or is he endorsing, as he did in the past, as back in actually 2008 and 2009, basically applauding what Reverend Wright said? Is that the right approach is not God bless America, it's GD America. There was also a Kelly Loeffler zeroed in on Warnock's new comments in his various sermons to paint the pastor as the most radical and dangerous politician in America. Now, that might be an overstatement. There are people even more radical and even more dangerous, but they're more dangerous because they've already been elected. He's trying to get elected for the first time to public office and trying to run away from some of his past comments. And some of his past comments that have also come out fairly recently involve very recent comments that he made when the Trump administration took a step that was praised, honestly, in a bipartisan manner by almost everybody. Another exception of someone who didn't praise it was John Kerry, but that's another matter. When the Trump administration moved the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. And here's what Pastor Warnock said about that. And this was in 2018, right after a ceremony that was held in the White House lauding the restoration of the U.S. Embassy, relocation of the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which had been officially supported by both Republican and Democratic leaders for years. Warnock said, "It's been a tough week. The administration opened up the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem. Standing there, the president's family and a few mealy-mouthed evangelical preachers who are responsible for the mess that we found ourselves in, both there and here, misquoting and misinterpreting the scriptures," he said, talking about peace. Then he added, "Meanwhile, young Palestinians, sisters and brothers, who are struggling for their very lives, struggling for water and struggling for their human dignity, stood up in a nonviolent protest saying, if we're going to die, we're going to die struggling." And he said, "We saw the government of Israel shoot down unarmed Palestinians, sisters and brothers, like birds of prey. And I don't care who does it. It is wrong. It is wrong to shoot down God's children like they don't matter at all." Okay. What he was talking about was an attempt to rush the border fence from Gaza and to basically attack Israel, which, by the way, has been the policy of Hamas in Gaza for years and years. I know Reverend Warnock now says he stands with Israel, and no one will stand with Israel more firmly than him when he's elected to the Senate, God forbid. But the idea that you have to run away from this kind of stupidity, well, it, at least it's encouraging that he recognizes how damaging this kind of opinion is. He says that Warnock said he was asked to defend Reverend Wright for saying GD America. That was a sermon that Reverend Wright gave in 2003. It became public in 2008 during the campaign, and that he was sent out to defend it. Okay, you begin defending it by saying it's unacceptable, right? Because if you're going to say it's acceptable to say GD America, then it seems to me you've got a problem if you're running for the United States Senate in Georgia. Really. The fate of that campaign is going to be extraordinarily important. And it's going to be important not only for determining the direction of the United States Senate, but determining the direction of the Democratic Party. There's a fascinating perspective on this provided by Gerald Seib of the Wall Street Journal. And he takes a look at some of the problems that Democrats have faced recently and questions why there is so much attack from the right wing on the American election system, precisely at a time when Republicans have been doing remarkably well. What's the proof of that? Well, I hope we get more proof in Georgia, but we'll get to this idea that you shouldn't fight the electoral system in which the GOP thrives. We'll get to that coming up on The Medved Show. I think it's a much better situation here on the Michael Medved Show and across the country and around the world if Americans accept the fact that we have an election system. And the election system works pretty well. And it's actually worked extraordinarily well for Republicans. And we ought to face up to that reality. That's a point made by Gerald Seib today in a column he just released, in which he writes, Trump fights system in which GOP thrives. And he's talking about the fact that not that the president has indicated that, yes, he is cooperating now and his administration is, and the General Service Administration is, they're cooperating with the presidential transition. But the fact that there are still people who are representing the president in legal conflicts and people who are among his supporters who believe that he actually won and that the entire election system is corrupt and horrible. For instance, there's Sidney Powell, who is quoted by Gerald Seib. Sidney Powell, who at one time was considered one of that, quote, illegal strike force on the Trump legal team, who said that we have no idea how many Republicans or Democratic candidates in any state across the country paid to have the system rigged to work for them. And she asserted that leading Georgia Republicans, yes, like Kelly Loeffler, who we're just talking about, and Senator David Perdue, were somehow part of this illicit scheme. Gerald Seib in the Wall Street Journal writes, those amount to an assault on a system that has been quite good to the GOP. Republicans have actually been the more prosperous of the two parties operating within that system. And in fact, had a quite successful election this year, something largely obscured by the furor over the presidential outcome. Republicans won 8 of the 13 presidential elections before this year's campaign. They've been in the majority in the Senate for the past 6 years and for 16 of the past 26. Republicans have controlled the U.S. House of Representatives for 20 of the past 26 years. And in this year's now disputed election, he writes, Republicans actually did quite well in most ways. They picked up seats in the House, could be as many as 12 seats when it's all done. They picked up seats in the House. They won a series of closely contested Senate races and may well retain their control of the Senate after two runoff races in Georgia in January. At the state level, the results have been even better. Republicans hold 27 of the 50 governor seats after turning the governor's office in Montana their way. Beyond that, the only two state legislative changes in the country to switch party control this past year went to the Republicans in New Hampshire, where they took control of both the House and the Senate from the Democrats. All told, in the latest count from the National Conference of State Legislatures, Republicans hold almost 500 more state representative seats across the country than the Democrats, and just over 200 more state Senate seats. In sum, this isn't the picture of a party beleaguered by a system rigged in its to its detriment. If anything, it is the picture of the party that top to bottom has been the more dominant across the country in this era. And this era goes back almost a generation. For Mr. Trump, the cost of fighting on could be more personal. Whatever one thinks of the president personally, he has been a president of consequence, writes Gerald Seib. In two consecutive elections, he activated millions of previously dormant voters. Even in defeat, he won the support of more than 70 million Americans, the second highest vote total ever recorded for a presidential candidate, behind only President-elect Joe Biden in the same election. Trumpism figures to live on. Yeah, but it's not going to be helped by going over to Hollywood celebrities like the lunatic Randy Quaid. Don't mistake Randy Quaid for Dennis Quaid. Dennis Quaid is a serious actor. Randy Quaid at one time was a serious actor, but he has been truly a weird eccentric for a long time after the highlight of his career playing Cousin Eddie in the National Lampoon Vacation franchise. He also played Lyndon Johnson in a made-for-TV movie that he got an Emmy for, Emmy nomination. Playing crazy Cousin Eddie and Lyndon Johnson, same kind of thing. Okay, what he's playing now appears to be a mad Santa Claus. He has this big, bushy beard, and he has appeared in delivering a number of sentiments with his big, bushy beard, with a strobe light going over his face, an intense close-up in a Santa Claus beard. And one of his social media posts that the president retweeted, I'm sorry, he did, sounded like this.
Fox News daytime ratings have completely collapsed. Weekend daytime, even worse. Very sad to watch this happen.
But they forgot the way...
They forgot what made them successful. What got them there. They forgot the golden goose. The only difference between the 2016 election and 2020 is Fox News.
His brain is gone.
In other words, he seems to be blaming Fox News for the fact that President Trump lost. He also has called for a revote. He sent another tweet that President Trump has retweeted, in which he said, "We've lost confidence in the system that elects our leaders. 79 million Americans believe the election was rigged. The results fraudulent. We need an in-person only paper ballot revote, especially in the states where flagrant irregularities have occurred. No accuracy, no democracy." And Trump shared that message with the line, "Are you listening, Republicans?" I don't think it's constructive advice to ask Republicans to listen to Randy Quaid. And by the way, just for background, I actually looked up his arrest record in recent years of he and his wife, Evie. And yes, a lot of it is seems like trivial stuff, but it's extensive. I actually don't have time or inclination, frankly, to go over it with you. Something that I do want to go over with you is a series of highlights, I guess they're called, that have gone viral. I mean, it's highlights of a special HBO program, which is so extreme and so ridiculous. It's a show called, a new documentary called Transhood, which follows a four supposed transgender kids, including a four-year-old. And honestly, it's very disturbing, but it's very important that people come face-to-face with it. There's also, speaking of very disturbing, the Florida Holocaust Center. And it's a Holocaust Center that has now opened a new George Floyd exhibit. Is that because the assumption is that police officers in Minnesota, including the Black and Asian police officer who were arrested in George Floyd's killing, that they are in fact Nazis and genocidal? Is there a legitimate comparison between American police and Nazi mass murderers? No, I don't believe that there is. We will cover that with you and more on where we go in terms of party ID and party strength and what new polling says about the direction the Republicans need to go. One direction Republicans need to go is very clear opposition to the blanket forgiveness of student loans. It's a lunatic idea that could actually derail the beginnings of a Biden administration. We will get to that and much more coming up in this greatest nation on God's green earth.